And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, 4 minutes past nine. You're very welcome along to Tuesday's 9 to noon show here on Highland Radio. Now, we have another packed show for you, lots coming up on the programme, and we want you involved in the conversation. And I'm going to remind you, as I do every morning, how you get involved, or indeed start to WhatsApp as well, by the way, too. And if you want to give us a call, Caroline taking your calls this morning, 074 91 25000, and if email's your thing, comments@highlandradio.com. and good morning to Dolores and Audrey already joining us to watch the show. Just to remind you, if you want to watch it on your smart TV, most smart TVs now have access to the YouTube app. You can download it, or it's there already. Just search Highland Radio Ireland and give us a like and watch away there on your big screen. And also on your Fire Stick, you'll find the YouTube app there as well. And we're across all your devices on both YouTube and Facebook. The papers today are full of devastating pictures primarily what stands out at me is children covered in dust, caught up in the awful scenes that we're seeing in the Middle East at the moment. And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel is fighting for its existence and called on opposition parties to join an emergency national unity government. This is the Irish Times. His comments came as Israeli aircraft pounded Gaza in advance of a massive ground offensive, which is expected in the coming days. Almost 700 residents in Gaza have already been killed, with almost 4,000 wounded. Israel claims hundreds of fatalities were militants. Israel also killed four Hezbollah fighters in South Lebanon yesterday after Palestinian gunmen infiltrated across the Lebanese border, raising fears that the powerful Iranian-backed Shia group will launch a second front. And that would be as devastating as things already are. If a second front opens, it's going to make a very, very unstable area. Of course, I mean, you could even roll it out to the global level. Iran backed by Russia, Israel backed by America. There's already a war, proxy war raging between the two in Eastern Europe. And now, obviously, it could happen here as well. We are at the third day of the war for our very existence, one which we will win, Mr. Netanyahu said in a live televised address to the nation last night. Hamas is the same as ISIS and will combat it in the same way it was combated by other countries in the world. We've always known that Hamas was, and now the world knows is too. Let me say this clearly, we've only begun to act against Hamas. His comments come as the number of Israelis killed in Saturday's attack, when hundreds of Hamas militants infiltrated across the border, rose to 900. And that figure is expected to rise. Now, of course, too, what he also announced yesterday, Netanyahu, is that he is, and it's really against international human rights laws, you would imagine, he is cutting water, gas, electricity to the city of Gaza, which is obviously going to have a devastating impact on its population. It runs, as far as I'm aware, by controlled by Hamas, and on it goes. And another part of the world where there's just a devastating loss of life and children caught up in it as well. The Irish Times. The Irish Independent focuses on what we're likely to see in the budget. There's going to be no surprises this afternoon because most of it's out. In terms of housing, mortgage interest relief worth $1,250. I believe that's particularly if you are on a variable rate or you are on a tracker. 750 renters credit, tax cuts for landlords. Almost €400 in energy credits are expected. In terms of social welfare, €12 per week increase on pension and social welfare rates. Christmas bonus of social welfare payments. Once off double payment of all social welfare in January. And there'll be plenty of scrutiny of all of this, of course. But it's probably going to work out that workers will get effectively a €15 increase per week. And those on social welfare will get €12 of an increase per week. And I suspect there might be a bit of a backlash from workers in relation to that. Top rate of tax to rise by $2,000, cut to USC from 4.5% to 4%. Minimum wage hike by $1.40 to $12.70, which is a cost that will be taken by employers, not necessarily the government. In terms of student grants to increase by more than €300, free school books for 770,000 children. Cigarettes are going to go up 50% as well. And then there are some other measures. There'll be 50 cent added to the price of 20 cigarettes, while Mr McGrath will outline a plan to tax e-cigarettes and vapes, though that requires new legislation. Fuel and alcohol will not be hit with a further excise increase, and a scheduled 7 cent increase in the price of petrol and 6 cent on a litre of diesel, which had been due to apply from the end of this month, will be delayed. And there's also a problem too coming down the track with oil prices, because that situation that has now emerged between Hamas and Israel is already driving up the price of a barrel of oil, which means eventually, and I don't know how long it might take, unfortunately, that's going to filter through to the petrol pumps and to your home heating oil and what have you. Right, on to the Irish Daily Mail this morning. And Ireland is paying Ukrainian refugees €220 a week, more than five times as much as other refugees. Concerns are growing across government over Ireland's outlier status when it comes to the scale of welfare payments for Ukrainian refugees when compared to other European states. Leo Varadkar hinted at potential for changes in areas such as welfare in response to a recent parliamentary question from independent TD Mark McSherry. The latter asked if the Taoiseach was aware that while we provide €38.80 per week for those seeking international protection, we are a complete outlier in the EU and neighbouring countries with the provision of €220 per week for those fleeing Ukraine. Deputy McSherry said, according to the European Centre for Parliamentary Research and Documentation, this is more than twice that provided by the next highest country, Finland, at €107, and almost 28 times more than the €790 per week provided in Belgium. He continued, such an anomaly amounts to the effective marketing of Ireland as the preferred location for those fleeing Ukraine. Will the government adjust our policy to provide an element of balance with other countries, given the inordinate pressure on accommodation in this country, he asked. Well, the Taoiseach said the benefit of the Temporary Protection Directive gives people particular rights under EU law. We're constantly looking at what our offering is for refugees fleeing the war in Ukraine versus what is offered in other EU countries. And he indicated that we have to be sensible about these things. So whether or not that will be changed in the near future remains to be seen, but it's clear there's much more money available in Ireland than there is in other countries. On to vapes, and a couple of papers have done a expose on vapes today. Children can buy vapes with shocking ease, the Irish Daily Star says it has revealed. A 14-year-old boy openly purchased four disposable devices in an hour because there's no law on selling them to under-18s. Ireland is one of the last countries in the world that has not yet banned their sale to kids. He bought brightly coloured, sweet-flavoured vape pens as easily as lollipops in a corner shop, a dedicated vape outlet, and two phone stores in Dublin city centre. The paper's special investigation also found seven children were hospitalised last year due to vaping, one with antifreeze poisoning. The paper says it also learned primary schools see young kids with vapes, while principals report most teens use the devices. And our probe, as they described it, also confirmed plans to introduce a raft of laws before the end of the year to regulate sale and protect children, which will also cover the excise on those devices as well, I'm sure. The Irish Daily Mirror, about 17,000 women in the north will have smear tests rechecked by the Southern Health Trust as part of a major review dating back to 2008. A report from the Royal College of Pathologists found that while the majority of negative results issued by the Trust's laboratory screen service were correct, a significant number of women are likely to have had negative screening results. In what the Southern Trust called a precautionary measure, records of about 17,000 women screened between January 1, 2008 and October 2021 will be reviewed. Dr. Stephen Austin of Southern Trust said the report identified performance issues in the lab. And then also an interesting study which was reported yesterday as to what the British public think of Brexit. Are they happy with it? Do they think it's going well? Well, less than one in 10 or fewer, I think, when you're talking about individuals, you have to say fewer, not lesser. Fewer than 1 in 10 British voters believe Brexit has gone well, according to a new study. However, the research found the idea of a new referendum is divisive and that a majority of Leave voters would still vote the same way again. The poll was carried out for the UK in a Changing Europe think tank. Only 9% of respondents feel Brexit went well, and less than a third believe it will ever turn out well. However, the public first opinion poll and interviews with focus groups found that this dissatisfaction would not automatically translate into a vote to rejoin the EU. It found that 48% would vote to rejoin, while 32% would vote against. So it might pass, probably, when it came down to it, it wouldn't. On the subject of whether or not you would vote to go back into Europe if you're in Britain, it's 50-50, really, I would say. But 9% of people believe Brexit went well. And finally, Cork TD Sean Sherlock is the latest politician to announce he will not run in the next election, according to The Sun. The Labour veteran yesterday confirmed he will not be on the ballot after his Mallow stronghold was removed from the Cork East constituency in the latest boundary redraw. It follows the shock resignation of former party leader, Labour Party leader, that is, Brendan Howland. Lots of them are saying, right, enough is enough. I'm going to take my money and pensions and run. Go on and do something else, I'm sure. Okay, that's the papers for you this morning. And as we revealed on the show yesterday morning, 78 GPs working across Donegal come together to write a letter to the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, calling for urgent action at the emergency department at Letterkenny University Hospital. It follows on from a meeting with hospital management where they highlighted their patient safety concerns, particularly in relation to access to services at the hospital. And we heard yesterday from Dr. McGuinness, that they don't believe that the current hospital management really have the wherewithal to make the changes that are required to ease the issue. They talked of their patients not wanting to go to the ED. They talked about them feeling it not safe sometimes to send their patients, particularly older patients, to the ED. Paddy Rooney's former Assistant General Manager at Letterkenny University Hospital and has accepted our invite to give us his insight into this, Paddy. It's a difficult one because we are all of the one community, do you know what I mean? And you know, there are individuals involved, and it's kind of a difficult one to talk about at times, but this is so severe that we must. It is unprecedented to have 78 GPs come together and put together such a strongly worded letter, Paddy. Your initial reaction to that?
Well, it's not difficult to talk about it at all, Greg, because it's a very serious matter for everybody, and I suppose not alone for the cohort of people who are depending on the ED in Letterkenny, but also people around the country, because, I mean, we're only talking about Donegal here. This has been repeated round and round. I suspect, Greg, that if you chose any cohort of GPs around the country, that they could equally pen a similar letter to the Minister of Health about their local hospital, and the content of it wouldn't be any different. I mean, the letter is very well constructed, and I think that very few people can argue with the content of the letter, because it's expressing the deep frustration on behalf of GPs who are looking for access to secondary care for their patients, and also about the feelings of patients themselves about their experience. But I have to say, it's also expressing the experience as well of hospital consultants. I mean, Dr. Cameron Peter was on your programme within the last 2 years, more or less articulating the same thing from the receiving end. But I have to say as well that it's not in the letter, but it articulates the feeling of hospital management. I remember I was that soldier, part of that team one time, and there was a huge frustration on our part that we felt that we didn't have the configuration and the tools to be able to meet the demand. I mean, some of my own extended family members attended the emergency department during the summer, and their experience in the ED, sorry to say, has been something similar to the sentiments that have been expressed in the letter. Now, the letter, it's a very long one, and I suppose there's about three or four nuggets in the middle of it, but one of the things is that they're looking for, apart from the reviews, additional resources, but they don't actually spell out what they are, because, and I know Jerry McMonigle, the chairman of the Western Health Forum, was on your programme yesterday too, and he was also calling for extra resources. Now, the big danger here would be that people would start putting in things, Greg, without finding out, first of all, what is the problem here? Because in the letter that they talk about a review of the services, I think everybody in the round is going to welcome that. And I'm talking about hospital. I haven't spoken to anybody now in the last 24 hours about this in the hospital, but hospital management will greet this warmly, and so will hospital consultants. And I mean, at the centre of all this, Dr. McGuinness said it yesterday, and it's in the letter, about putting patient at the centre and about timely access to care for them. I mean, there's something odd going on in the round here, Greg. And by that, I mean, you had a nice sort of a folksy, warm interview with Dr. McGuinness yesterday, which was fine. And he articulated all his points very well. And you could argue with very little with them. But there's something going on about demand, whatever, about supply here. And nobody can answer that question. But these are things that are going to have to be answered. And hopefully they will be in the review. And what I'm talking about here is that over the last 30 years, there's been a 400% increase in the number of referrals and attendances at the emergency department in Letterkenny. And that cannot be explained away by the increase of population, because the last two census didn't prove that. We lost a TD in the general election here in 2011. Mm. We didn't get it back because the population didn't increase.
But just in relation to that, Paddy, and I know it's a well thought out point that you'll want to continue. We heard from Dr. McGuinness yesterday, regardless of the tone of the interview. He said, was it 5% of patients that visit GP practices are referred? We've also spoken to people within the ED. Who say the majority of people that are there need to be there. I mean, they need to be there. The people we talk about, when we talk about waiting lists, it's people waiting to get a bed in the hospital. They're not there twiddling their thumbs.
It is the need to be there, but it's not an extraordinary thing that we will have about 200 people will attend the emergency department in Letterkenny today. And is anybody trying to suggest that they are 200 people that require the emergency?
No, but if someone's got a cut on their hand that requires stitches, when I cut my wrist, my upper wrist on a piece of glass years and years ago, I got stitched up in the hospital in Donegal Town.
You did, but that's not the hospital. That's not the fault now of hospital consultants.
No, I'm not saying, This is why,
Greg, that the people are going to welcome the review, because there's everything but everything. I mean, how do you explain the fact that there's 52,000 people attended the emergency department last year when there was only 12,000? It's interesting to note as well, by the way, I'm not bashing at GPs, but I'm talking about things in the round here about what needs to be done to fix this. There were 79 GPs signed the letter, and they provide, a very valuable service 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. But for the other 28 hours of the week, Greg, that drops down to 3. That must mean something, or does it mean anything? And I mean, Dr. Dennis McCauley, the spokesperson for the Irish College of GP, said in your programme last year, and he repeated it on RTE TV as well, about the GPs now, because of the pressure they're under now, they breached the same-day appointment rule. There's anecdotal evidence coming through that people are not getting timely access to GP care either. And they're voting with their feet. I listened to what Dr. McGuinness said yesterday of people that are afraid to go to GP, but they're coming in their droves and they're going up. There's an extra 12 to 1500 year on year. Not be that long, Greg. We'll be 100,000 people will be attending the emergency department. That's the way they're going. So a review is very, very welcome to deal with your cut hand and everything else. That there's going to have to be a mechanism in place to have ED avoidance put in place and alternatives to it, because the demand is too great. And I suppose the other thing that Dr. McGuinness said, which I was very disappointed in, I know you pressed him on the point about the confidence in hospital management here to be able to respond to this. I mean, hospital management, I've spoken to you before about this, they actually have their hands tied behind their back in dealing with this, because GPs know, hospital consultants know, and the hospital management knows what needs to be put in place to be able to respond to this. And Dr. McGuinness made one very valuable point yesterday about the reopening of the medical assessment unit. And In order for that to work, though, because in the medical assessment unit, my experience was now, because I'm out of the place for 6 years, so things may be different now, but medical referrals, which are the most complex that come to a hospital, they start to drift in around 11 or 12 o'clock, and the last of them come around, slows down at around 7 to 8 o'clock in the evening. But just because somebody comes in at 7 to 8, you have to process them and so on and so forth. But because hospital consultants, it doesn't matter if you have 1,000 consultants in the hospital, they're all off duty at 5 o'clock. There's only a small cohort on call. They've worked that day. Mm-hmm. They have to go into work the next day. So they can't be there all of the time. So you have a situation then, Greg, that you're going to have GPs. I know a lot of the names on that list. They're very experienced. They've got a high skill set. And they're referring patients into the medical assessment unit to be seen by junior doctors with nowhere near level of experience and nowhere near level of skill set as the people that has referred them. And a lot of the tools that the doctors in the hospital and the clinical staff need to be able to see the patients, they're all switched off at 5 o'clock.
I get that.
The important point here, though, Greg, is the hospital management have no capacity to be able to fix that.
Yeah, of course they don't. But they could. In a later interview with Councillor Jerry McMonagle, I put it to him, why is that information not communicated to people who are sitting in ED for 12 hours when the services that you talk of are closed? They're thinking, right, are we going to get cold soon? Well, no, you're not, because it's 8 o'clock at night and they don't reopen until 8. That kind of information could be reiterated. But let me put it to you like this, though. And as I say, I'm not I want to work with people in whatever role we have here to improve things. But if we've got GPs that are saying that we have to make a clinical decision whether sending a patient to the ED would actually worsen their outcome. They could potentially die from that. And then we have people that are sitting there for 36 hours, older people sitting there for 24 hours, a terrible state of affairs, okay? Is it not about time then that hospital management came out and not say, oh, hands are tied, there's nothing we can do about it? This is potentially life and death. Is it not about time then that they made it very, very clear how their hands are tied, what is lacking for them, and call it out? Now, that might not be very good professionally, but we're talking about life and death here, Paddy. So, you know, I appreciate you coming on, right? But we hear this from you. Why don't we hear this from the management that says, look, we see what's going on in this hospital, but our hands are tied. There's nothing we can do.
Well, the answer to that, I suppose, is fairly obvious, because if I was still working in the hospital, I wouldn't be having this frank conversation with you like I'm having now. And I can't remember, was it about 4 or 5 years ago, there was 5 CEOs of the major teaching hospitals in Dublin issued a joint statement about the level of safe care in, it was like the Matter at the Beaumont and the St. Vincent's, and they were all officially sanctioned by the chief executive of the HSE at the time. And they were told not to do it again. Do you remember that? You can Google it. I can't remember the names of the guys and so on. I mean, because they don't have the permission and the wherewithal to do that. That's why. And it wouldn't be a career-enhancing move to do that.
So do you think these GPs have thrown the hospital manager, the management team, under the bus then on this?
Well, I think that what Dr. McGuinness said to you yesterday was unfortunate, because if he wants to lay the blame somewhere, I'm afraid he's going to have to go somewhere else to do it. I mean, we've had a very complex sláinte care report to deal with this, and it's about 800 pages long. And we're well into there was supposed to be a 10-year rollout of that programme. I don't know what's happened to it. People will blame COVID, I suppose, for it being derailed, but it's not achieving, because the demand keeps going up and up all the time, but the capacity of the hospitals and the configuration about the way the services are provided are not changing, Greg. I mean, I'm grey in the face saying on this programme over the last 5 years about the fact that hospitals need to be switched over to a 24/7 model and then give the hospital some chance of being able to deal with, because they have to deal with efficiencies in the first case rather than putting in extra resources. It's a pity you didn't ask Councillor McMonagle yesterday when you talked about additional resources. What exactly is he talking about? Because more beds is not going to fix anything here. It's about efficiencies. It's about the patients in the hospital that have been medically discharged already by the hospital consultant. Is it hospitals management fault that there's 700 or 800 patients up and down the country warehousing in hospitals at the moment because there's nowhere for them to go? No,
we've teased that out before. But then, right, you talk about if you poll GPs in various parts of the country, that you would hear similar messages. But what then is it about Donegal that we have some of the longest waiting times in AD, that we have we are consistently one of the most overcrowded hospitals in the country, that we have some of the slowest ambulance response times, that we have 14 ambulances queued up outside the hospital. Now, that is an extreme occurrence, but it does happen. There are unique elements to the crisis at Letterkenny University Hospital, or not unique, but you know, that are worse than elsewhere. Are you saying that that what is?
Well, I can't answer that, and I don't want to be coming across, because I'm outside of the system now for 6 years, and I don't want to be trying to justify the awfulness, because I said at the very outset that my own family experience was consistent with what's in the letter, and that there's no lies or anything like that. It is real. But what I'm saying is that a simplistic fix about, you know, passing a no confidence motion and the hospital manager on opening the medical assessment unit will do nothing to fix this. It is much more complex and multifaceted than it, because I'll tell you what, when I was on your programme during the summer, we were talking about RTE. And if you remember, Greg, I said to you, I'm sort of less interested about what's coming out of RTE. I'm more interested about what the response is going to be. Well, I'm going to really love this one to see about A, if the GPs get a meeting with the Minister of Health. And I see Robert Watt has CC'd into them. Good luck to them with that. And about the CEO of SAILTA, because they're all in the mix here. If they think for 1 minute that the solution to this is internal to the hospital only, and I fear that that's a very simplistic view on it. Let's see, will the cavalry arrive here then with the CEO of SAILTA and the CEO of the HSE and the Minister of Health and fix it? Let's see what comes out of that. And it'd be very interesting to revisit this in about 6 months' time. And the other thing, I suppose, that Dr. McGuinness said to you yesterday about, and I fully agree with him, about doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome, that that's silly, and that they won't be put off this time and they will take to the streets. Well, you know, I hope that Mary T. Sweeney, the INTO representative in the area, was listening to that, because she tried to organise a public demonstration in July of last year about the overcrowding in the hospital and what was happening in ED, and she got less than 100
but
people.
There's a fundamental problem there in that any politically led, even if you say in advance that it's not political, any political led protest, if it's aimed to Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, if the GPs look what Professor Mulpeter achieved, because he was not political and he had people lined up right around the hospital. If the GPs call a protest and say they'll lead it, I would not be surprised if it were in the low thousands of people that would come out to that, Paddy.
Well, I hope so. I hope that's success, because I am at the age now, for instance, Greg, that, because I'm retired and I'm at the age that I fall into the category of people now that's going to be overusing the health service, and I may well end up being a person or a patient in ED, and I don't want to have to wait there for 36 hours. So I hope that something comes of this. The only point that I'm making here is that it's not going to, okay, the solution that is not internal to the hospital is much better than that.
So what then, finally, is it changing it to a level 4 hospital? Is it, you know, because there are loads of positions advertised and funded, but they can't recruit. There has to be a solution, though, Paddy. I know it's not easy.
In the letter, it mentions the word radical, and Dr. McGuinness said to you yesterday, radical. Radical looks like something like this. It looks like examining the breadth and the depth of primary care service in this hospital to try and keep back the low complexity stuff that's coming to the emergency department. Radical looks like having senior decision making, I'm talking about hospital consultants in the different in the major specialties in the hospital, boots on the ground from 8 a.m. until about 10 o'clock at night, 7 days a week. That's going to cause for extra consultants. It radical means that the tools that they need to be able to, about the respiratory lab, to have pulmonary function tests, about the cardiac investigation, to do cardiac echoes and stress tests and whatever else they need. about having OT assessment, having physio assessment, having MRI available, okay. having CT readily available. That's what Radical looks like. But I don't think we're going to get that because hospital management won't get approval to put that in place.
Okay, and I asked a direct question of the doctor yesterday and asked you a direct question as well to some extent, and I think you maybe have hinted at this through the course of the interview. Do you think GPs are deflecting and perhaps need to take a look at take a closer look at the role they may be playing in this?
I don't know because I'm not close enough to it. But if this review in the round is done properly and it's done fairly, it's going to have a look at it. I mean, there's anecdotal evidence coming through now that the people out there are having difficulty in getting timely access to a GP. Not all of it, but a lot of primary care services have not returned to pre-COVID level. I mean, there's only certain things that GPs can do, the certain things that they have to pass on. But the low complexity of level, I mean, the sheer volume of people going through. See, a lot of the people, the problem in ED too is congested because the exit routes out of it are blocked. The problem is manifest in ED, but it's not an ED problem we have in this country. It's just what happens before and it's what happens after is the problem.
Okay. As always, Paddy, thank you very much indeed. I appreciate your time.
Okay.
Paddy Rooney, he's a former Assistant General Manager at Letterkenny University Hospital. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Now, we are going to speak to people affected by what's seen as terrible news, or what is terrible news this week. 18 families in Ballymacool Estate have received eviction notices from the developer, landlord. They say the company situation has changed and they are selling the properties. Now, we've contacted the company in question or the individual in question, and as of yet, we've had nothing back from them. Cahill McFinn is chair of the Ballymacool Residents Association. Thanks for joining us, Cahill.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having us on.
So this has come somewhat out of the blue, or completely out of the blue, I suppose.
Greg, this came out of the blue to all these families at the end of last week, where they were all issued with eviction notices to vacate their houses so the developer could sell the houses. We have now at least 19 families with, we think, more that have yet to come forward that haven't contacted us. But I'm the chair of the Residents Association out there. So over the weekend, we started getting a lot of messages through our Facebook site from these families who've been issued with the notices. You know, so obviously we have a lot of worry and anger and frustration at the fact that these families are now facing homelessness. We think it's just an awful situation. You know, with the way things are at the minute, there's no accommodation out there for these families. With, you know, MICA that's going on, and with the state of the country at the minute, we're in the midst of a housing crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And these families are, although it's eviction notices, they are in reality facing homelessness, where they have no place to go. We've been looking on daft.ie, for example, for to see how many premises are available for rent in the locality. So we have basically 15 properties that are available for rent around the area, but none of these properties are affordable for working class families at the end of the day. So we have been in touch with and working closely with Councillor Meal Colum McGill Asbug, who has been in contact with Donegal County Council housing manager in Letterkenny for us, to ask that staff are available to meet and support these unfortunate families. We have also been working closely with CATU, who are the Community Action and Tenants Union, and we've had some constructive discussion with them.
Is it the option been raised of the council purchasing these properties?
Not all of these families are on the council housing list. So we're hoping that the council will facilitate a meeting so that we can address and meet and support all the issues that the families are facing at the minute. So that's what we have requested from the County Council Housing Manager, that he can meet with all the families and see if that is an option, that the council will be able to purchase at least some of them and keep these families in their homes.
Yeah, I'll come back to you, Cahill. Stay where you are, because Alexandra is a resident in Ballymacool. Alexandra, thank you for joining us this morning.
No problem. Thank you at all.
When did you get the letter, and what was your reaction when you read it?
So basically around 20 families received letter last week. We all were in shock. Nobody expected that, especially that, you know, our landlord is going to build another 52 houses on our estate. So nobody was expecting that letter at all. We all are in shock. We all are very stressful, because it's also just before Christmas time. You know, that's our community here, and all the kids are playing together. We all know each other. We all can lean on each other, and it's just a very difficult situation for all of us.
And everyone has their own things in life that make it, you know, even more difficult. Yours is that you have a child you're expecting, and this eviction would...
I'm due in March, so basically the same month that I have to move out, because we have to leave the house till April.
Yeah. And do you see any hope? I mean, we heard from Cahill there about the lack of availability of property.
Yes, as Cahill said, it's only 15 houses available for rent in Letterkenny at the minute. And at the moment, around 20 families on our estate only received a letter to move out. So basically, some of us will have to be homeless. Our kids are already very stressed. You know, they were playing yesterday, and they were asking, "Mommy, Daddy, are we going to be homeless?" So it's very stressful for all of us.
I'll come back to you, Cahill. In terms of Twin Estates who were selling these properties, in the letters, they recognise the difficulty this presents, but also how their situation has changed. They say, "I'll offer you the opportunity to reoccupy the dwelling under tenancy if we do not sell the house." Several tenants have expressed an interest in purchasing the houses. They say they're happy to explore that further. And also that they've spoken to other accommodation providers who've indicated that they have alternative premises and are willing to help where necessary. So why does that, in your view, Cahill, not go far enough? Or why
well,
does that not...
This is another letter, Greg, that they sent around the households yesterday evening.
Uh-huh.
And I think what they're trying to do there is just soften the blow. I mean, they're saying that these families can move back into their houses if they're not sold. Where are they supposed to go in the interim?
Meantime, yeah.
Are they supposed to put, in the meantime, are they meant to put tents up in Ballymacool Park and stay in the tents and wait and see if their house is sold out from under them or not before they can move back in? You know, it's just not realistic. The developer there has other properties in the town. He states that he has other properties that he's renovating, and that they could possibly move onto them. Why doesn't he sell the properties that he's renovating and keep the families in their homes? I think that's just trying to soften the blow, really, of what is happening here. You know,
what's the fact? These are families that are settled where they're settled. They've got friends and neighbours. Their children the same. Maybe the access to schools. Even just moving to the other end of town, even if that were an option, it still changes the dynamic of that community.
Yeah. Absolutely, a lot of these families have been living in the estate for over 14 years. You know, their children go to the local schools. They go to the local creches. They're working together, you know, their friends and families and all living beside each other. It's a close-knit community. And even if they were to be rehoused or rehomed somewhere else, you're dividing and splitting that community up and putting them to, you know, they don't even know if they're going to be in Letterkenny. If they have to get a house, it could be in a different town. So you're totally separating these people and breaking the community up. So it really isn't an acceptable situation. You know, we've never seen the likes of this before. I've been the chair of the Ballymacool Residents Estate Committee has been in place for over 10 years, and we've never, ever experienced anything like this before.
And Alexandra, what you have is uncertainty. You don't know where you're going to end up or how you're going to end up there, especially at a time, as you say, when you're, you know, looking after young children and pregnant and an eviction due around the time the baby is It must be very stressful for you and the family.
It is, you know, instead of having a good time now, planning everything and just being happy, we are very stressful because also like 90% of these families here who received letters is from Poland. So, you know, even we don't have like families here or any places to move even for a while till we'll find another house to rent or buy or we'll get council house. So it's very stressful for all of us. And, you know, like our kids are also going to local schools here or play schools. Not everyone is driving. Not everyone has a car. It will be, and you know, buses are coming here to collect kids for school. So it will be just very difficult for all of us.
Okay, Alexandra, thank you. So, Cathal, finally, I mean, this is privately owned property, and whoever owns it has given the reasons as to why they want to sell it. The evictions are within, whether people agree with them or not, to sell the property. You know, there is no eviction ban at the moment, so they're perfectly entitled to do that. So, and you mentioned the options, but what do you see as the solution here? If the person who owns these properties is determined to sell them, and I know you mentioned some options, but what do you see as the solution?
Well, presently or right now, our focus is on keeping these families in their homes for as long as we can. We will be speaking to the council housing manager again. We will be contacting Threshold. We have different avenues that we're going to go down. We need to speak to the RTB to see if all this is legal and above board first. We will be going through each individual case because, you know, although it is a large number of families, each case is individual, so we'll have to look at all of them. And, you know, what we want or what we would like to happen is for Twin Estates to reverse their decision to ask these families to vacate their homes and to keep the families in their homes.
Okay, I'm sure it's a story we're going to hear more of. Cathal, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Alexandra, thank you. If anyone else wants to get involved in that conversation, 086 60 25000.
The 9 till noon show with Letterkenny Credit Union. Simplify your debts with a debt consolidation loan from Letterkenny Credit Union. Call us on 074 910 2126 or apply online via our app or in office today.
GiveBlood.ie know we can count on you, our community of blood donors, to be there for others in their hour of need. Blood donors from Killybegs should attend the clinic in the Tara Hotel in Killybegs on Monday 9th of October, and donors from Donegal and Dunlow should attend the clinic in the Abbey Hotel in Donegal Town from Tuesday 10th to Thursday 12th. Making an appointment is recommended, so call 1-800-731-137 or visit our website to book your time. New donors are vital. Visit GiveBlood.ie to check eligibility and clinic details, because we count on you.
Get more, pay even less. Download the Lidl Plus app now. Tap to activate your coupons and cut costs with exclusive super savers like Irish carrots now 49 cent and Board B approved Irish chicken breast fillets now 5.79. Just scan those Lidl Plus coupons at the till. Go on, get more, pay even less. Go full Lidl today.
Looks like we're in for a cold spell.
Perfect weather to chill out in a steaming seaweed bath on Sligo's shores.
Talk of scattered showers too.
Perfect weather for sea swimming off the coast of Waterford. Sure you're already wet?
It's fierce windy out there.
Perfect weather to be swept off your feet in a romantic weekend in Cork City. Whatever the weather, it's always perfect weather to keep discovering. With great short breaks forecast right across Ireland, plan your next one now at discoverireland.ie.
Every Volvo made goes through a rigorous quality check process before it leaves the factory. Every pre-owned Volvo available through our Volvo Select program goes through that same process again, with all the quality, power and guarantee you expect from Volvo. Own a pre-owned all-electric Volvo C40 or XC40 Recharge with a minimum 12-month unlimited mileage warranty and Volvo assistance as standard. Get used cars recharged at McGinley Motors. Search Volvo Select or visit volvocars.ie. Terms and conditions apply.
Donegal GAA fans, don't miss the Michael Murphy Sports Sale starting this Wednesday the 11th. There's 30% of all official Donegal GAA leisure wear. Show your support for Donegal in style and grab your favourite leisure wear at unbeatable prices. Hurry, the sale is for a limited time with free next day delivery on orders over €85. See michaelmurphysports.ie.
Highland Radio weather updates with Ireland West Airport, where you can now fly daily to London Heathrow with Aer Lingus and connect via Heathrow to over 80 destinations worldwide, including Boston, New York and more.
Okie doke, I have to open up the weather forecast now because I was distracted by a certain Caroline Orr. So the weather forecast for today, last of the warmish kind of days, I think, you know. Outbreaks of rain and drizzle this morning. More persistent rain will develop in the northwest towards evening, tracking southeastwards, warm and humid. Temperatures 7 or 18 degrees, becoming breezier with moderate to fresh and gusty southwest winds. And if you've anything planned for the weekend, it's looking middling, not as warm but settled. We shall see. A caller says, I understand the crisis, but let's not forget these are renters. The owner is entitled to do as he pleases. And we're getting to a place where anyone who buys anything these days is not entitled to do as he pleases with it. Every business person in the world buys and sells to multiply. It's ridiculous that these renters think they have a sense of entitlement. It's no wonder so many landlords are leaving the field. Did I hear correctly, Paddy Rooney, say that the HSE bosses warned management of all the hospitals to keep their mouths shut? Well, not quite. What he said was is that there were a number of hospital managers in Dublin that came together. They were reprimanded for doing so. And Paddy, I don't want to misquote him, but I think he says that it might not necessarily be a good career move to speak out. Well, this caller says that effectively throws patients under the bus in order to save jobs. And that says a lot about the calibre of hospital managers that we have in Irish hospitals, that they're so easily cowed. I mean, that's your assessment of it. And I appreciate your text. Many thanks to the honest person who handed in the money to Don Stores yesterday from the person who lost it. It was hugely appreciated as it would have been a huge loss. Really encouraging. That is good to hear. And fair play to the person that handed it in. All right, it is the 9 till noon show. Community Garda information and so much more besides coming up in the next 2 hours of the programme. But now we're going to take a break for the news and obituary notices.